confident as I used to be when I was young and thought I'd be the Queen of Broadway one day. Oh, you haven't seen anything yet, I assure her with a wink, twisting on the faucet and soaking up a sponge. I start scrubbing the plates, growing thoughtful. I'm sure you'll find something. Have you been looking, at least? Brynn cleans up the place settings and stores them in a kitchen drawer. Then she comes up to help me dry the plates. I have, I admit, but I grow thoughtful again and hear myself admit something I've known for a while. Though I suppose a part of me has given up before trying harder, almost like my heart couldn't bear another rejection. She dries the wine glasses artfully and then passes me the towel so I can dry my hands. You shouldn't decide for the world, Sarah. The world is fickle and doesn't even know what it wants. Isn't it better to let others reject you than you yourself rejecting possibilities before even exploring them? She frowns at me in question. I think about it for a moment and shoot her a dry smile. You're right. I lean back on the counter and regard her with new eyes. There's so much more to Brynn Haworth than meets the eye. Sure, she's sweet and pretty, but she's actually smart and driven, too. Wow. You're a good roomie. I didn't know I'd have a therapist available 24/7 when I took you in, I say, nudging her as we head toward our rooms. Likewise. And hey, that's what friends are for. And I do hope that we can be that. Friends, she says hopefully as we each turn to our bedroom door. For some reason, after hearing about the dream startup company she's hunting funding for, I'm reminded of my own dreams. When I'm finally back in bed, I can't seem to sleep. I paint my fingernails and toenails, and while waiting for my toenails to dry, I skim the ads for Broadway auditions on my laptop rather vigorously, determined to find something. I may have found the roommate of my dreams. Now if only I could find the job of my dreams, too, I'd be over the moon with happiness. And if only I could find the guy I'm crushing after. Don't be greedy, Sarah Davies. You cannot have it all. But suddenly today, a part of me wants to believe that I can. Not the call I expected. Sarah.
There's another suit, Sarah. Carly nudges me behind the concierge desk.
I glance at the door and watch the tall, blonde businessman walk in.
Nope. Sarah likes the dark-haired ones. Robert chimes in behind me.
Ugh, you too. I shake my head and try to ignore them, hating that they've noticed me ogling every dark-haired businessman that has walked into the lobby over the past month. I'm a smart, young, good-looking, independent woman. I don't need him.
How's the new roommate? Does she know about your crazy manhunt? Carly asks.
Okay, first of all, I am not holding a manhunt. I tell Carly determinedly, rolling my eyes. And she's fabulous. The stars are definitely smiling down on me. I wink at them both, feeling positive.
Did you get the tickets for Wicked for room 511? Robert asks as the phone rings.
I hand him the envelope with the tickets as he picks up.
Concierge, this is Robert speaking.
There's silence before he slides his gaze in my direction.
Sarah, it's Walter.
Then Robert hangs up the phone.
Huh? Walter, Walter? I ask, confused.
Walter never calls for me. I doubt he knows my name. He's a short little man who likes to gather us all in weekly meetings to tell us how we're doing and how we can improve our jobs, while he skims his eyes down our skirts. He's only ever looked, but the girls and I still like to wear pants on the days he schedules the weekly meetings.
That's right. Walter, the hotel manager. He wants to talk to you. Now, Robert adds.
On my way. I run my hands down my uniform and head to the private offices in a secluded section of the hotel's lobby floor. Honestly, this can't be good. I'm trembling so hard I need to press my lips together as I rap on Walter's door. His name, engraved on the plaque, stares ominously back at me before I hear his voice from within the office saying, "Come in." My hand twists the doorknob, and I force myself to stride inside with confidence. I spot Walter behind his desk and instantly think, I'm getting fired. He's not making eye contact. He's not looking at my skirt. Instead, he stares at a paper as he says, take a seat. You are so fucking fired, Sarah. Or maybe I'm getting a promotion? Maybe I've done an outstanding job and I'm getting an Employee of the Month award. No, dumbass. You got caught fucking a hotel guest in room 1103 and now you're doomed. Well, he was a hot hotel guest, a part of me chirps in. That is irrelevant, my bitch of a conscience insists. You fucked him at the hotel, and you got caught. Now you'll not only never see the guy again and never know his name, you also won't have a job. My whole body feels as taut as a bowstring. I'm so tense if I move too fast or too brusquely I might break. God, please don't let Walter know about room 1103, I think, as I sit down.
We're letting you go.
I swallow. Fuck. He really fired me. He actually just fired me. I am being let go. Out of a job. Completely and utterly fucked. Oh my God. It's hard to respond to him. This is the second time I've been fired in my life, and I've only had two jobs. What does that say about me? I suddenly don't like myself very much. I feel like a worm. A worm who's scared shitless now that I'm going to be all alone in a big bad city, job hunting again. Is it something I did? I wring my hands.
Not really. More like didn't do. We don't feel you're as passionate as some of your co-workers. We're also making cuts, and when it came down to it, I believe you're the weakest member of the team. He pushes his glasses back up his nose and stares down at my file. You can finish your shift and pick up your check on your way out.
Wow. That's it? No, have a good life, Sarah, or it was great working with you? No, thanks for the tie you got me for my birthday. Or at the very least, Sarah, thanks for bringing us donuts out of the kindness of your heart all those times. Wow. I'm surprised I managed to walk steadily to the door, because it feels as if my world is spinning like a carousel that is going faster and faster by the second. What am I going to do? I stumble into the ladies' room and quickly hide myself inside a stall. I exhale a very effusive, fuck, and put my hands on my temples and review my conversation with Walter. I'm an absolute wreck. My dad always said I'd turn out this way. My dad, who is divorcing my mom and seems to think we're no good for him, was right. I'm apparently not good for anything. Picking dancing as a career would lead me nowhere. I'd end up with a dead-end job and no decent college degree to save me from it. I groan and lean back against the stall door, blinking my eyes as I fight back tears. Maybe I deserved to be fired. Walter wasn't wrong. I wasn't in love with this job. I wanted to love it like I love dancing, but I don't. It must have shown in my work. I gather my shit and leave the restroom feeling drained and defeated, and like I'm the biggest loser on the planet. Don't cry, I tell myself, as I head back to the concierge desk. You can cry all you want when you get back to your apartment. Focus on getting your shit and doing what's left of your job until your time is up.
What did Walter want? Robert asks.
I swallow hard before squeaking out. He fired me.
What? He fired you?
The flare in Robert's eyes reveals his complete shock. Carly doesn't look nearly as surprised, though.
That's sad. Oh, Sarah, I'm so sorry, she says.
I know. Who'll cover for you next time, right? I snap, my self-defense mechanism bubbling out to hide my hurt. Carly ignores my attitude.
You know who else got fired? Bert, one of the guys from the front door. Also, a shit ton of the cleaning ladies.
I tune Carly out as I let Robert hug me and tell me he's there for me if I need anything. I nod, pry free, and scan the concierge desk for any items that might be mine that I'd need to take home with me.
There's nothing for me to pack. That's what happens when you're a concierge. I don't have drawers full of stuff or pictures on my desk. I go, I work, I leave.
And today it's really hard to leave. I can't believe this is my last day. God, I never thought I'd miss being a concierge. Say goodbye, Sarah, I think, as I say farewell to my colleagues and return home, with no job, no dream, and without my mystery man's name.
What happened?
Bryn finds me bawling into a tissue when she arrives at the apartment. I'm so relieved to see her, I begin to cry harder. I guess it's like they say, man plans and God laughs. Wow, he must be laughing pretty hard right now.
I got fired. I had no idea they'd start making cuts and I'd be the first to go. What am I going to do?
I blow my nose and toss the tissue aside, while Bryn grabs a wastebasket, tosses in all the tissue balls and the empty box of tissues, and sets a fresh box before me.
You'll get a new job. She sits down beside me.
God, I knew I shouldn't have kept looking for dancing gigs. I got my hopes up and my dreams distracted me from my real job. I should have stayed focused.
It's not that easy. You can walk dogs with me, Bryn interrupts. That's your gig.
I'll split it with you, Bryn insists. I won't be able to dedicate as much time to it as I want to. I'll be too busy working on the startup.
Really? I eye her. How are you so confident you'll get the money? I hate being the party pooper, but we need to be realistic here. Honestly, I think it's a pipe dream. She's really smart and great at designing clothes, but no matter how much talent you have, I know that to be successful, luck has to somehow play a part as well. And luck doesn't seem to like this zip code.
Because I saw him again tonight, and I'm hoping I can wear him down, Bryn says optimistically.
Okay, so him is Bryn's equivalent of my hot workaholic. His name is Eric Christos, Manhattan bachelor soon to be wed, billionaire investor tycoon. How Bryn got a meeting with the man recently is a miracle.
It's not wishful thinking, I ask, because how many miracles can one girl in Manhattan expect in her life?
Sorry to break it to you, Rumi, I say softly, but half of the city wants the man's backing. Everyone thinks they have a genius idea, or wants someone who'll help them make their stupid idea genius.
Maybe, but I still mean to wear him down.
Clinging to her positivity, Bryn heads to the kitchen to pour us some tea.
You okay? She asks with concern as she returns and hands a cup to me.
I don't know, I finally admit, wishing I could feel as positive as Bryn does right now. I can't figure out what's gone wrong with my life. I pass a crumpled tissue along my nose, wad it up tight, and pull a new one from the box as I recite my failings. I went to Tisch School of the Arts here in NYU, but I broke my ankle during my first big break. 2 years went by, and recovery was a bitch, but even once healed, nothing. No leads, no successful auditions. So I became a concierge, and even then, doing something supposedly easy, I fail.
You didn't fail, Sarah. It wasn't your end game. It was your in-the-meantime job.
Yeah, well, I think about it for a moment, but that doesn't make me feel better. Because being a concierge was at least something real, not some dream. It at least fed me, clothed me, and kept me busy. I'm starting to wonder if most of us aren't destined to be stuck in our in-the-meantime.
I might agree, but then you see someone who had it worse than anyone, and who made it big. Not because he got lucky, he worked for it. It makes sense that if we work hard enough, we can go somewhere too.
You really like this guy, I say. I feel a pang of worry all of a sudden. Eric Christos is as hard to get can get. And he's in a relationship with some spoiled society darling. Does Bryn have a death wish or what?
No. I admire him, she counters. We were in high school when we met, and I admired his gumption. I suppose I liked him, too, she admits, but I could never understand how he made me feel. I guess I liked him enough that it confused me.
As if she's jinxing herself by admitting that, she quickly shakes her head.
But enough about that. I'm excited about the startup. If this takes off and you don't have a job, I'll hire you.
When do I start? I smirk.
Who knows? Call God's number and ask.
She flashes Christos's card, and I try to snatch it out of her hand. Give me that, I say as she pries it away. I need it more than she does.
Over my dead booty. It's my golden ticket, and I'm not giving it up, even to you. I'll give you some of my chocolate, though.
She disappears for a second and returns to toss a Godiva chocolate bar in my lap. I groan. Chocolate is my weakness, damn it, and my roommate didn't take long to figure it out.
Do we have any ice cream? I ask.
She brings an ice cream tub from the freezer and two spoons.
Anything else?
Yes. Can I adopt you? I straighten up in my seat and watch her settle down by me.
Come on. I'm only 2 years older than you, she says, as she pries the ice cream open, winking.
I know what else I'm missing. Confidence. I seem to have lost it somewhere, I admit to her as I stare at the silent TV across our living room. I think of Bryn and her startup dream, still so far out of reach. I think of myself and my own dreams, the dreams that, no matter how amazing, are still getting in the way of me making a solid foundation with what I currently have to work with. And I think of my mom and her dreams, and the heartbreak she's enduring at the hands of my dad. Her biggest dream, that of a loving husband and family, shattered. God, it fucks me up every time I think about it. Knowing my mom is hurting hurts. But it's not like she can hold my dad back. He doesn't love her anymore. Now, my mom needs to learn how to be on her own again and be comfortable like that. Just like you need to go out there and look for what you want rather than keep settling. Because the option of settling is no longer on the table, Sarah. You're jobless. So now, do you want to do what you love, or do you want to go for average again?
I have confidence in you, Bryn says, as she helps me scoop up a spoonful of ice cream.
Suddenly, I'm tired of feeling sad. Today has been a wreck. I just want to focus on the good things, the fact that I have someone to share a good tub of vanilla ice cream with, someone who has her own dreams.
Good, because I have confidence in you too, boss.
I grin, feeling a little better as we attack the ice cream, eating little pieces of the Godiva chocolate along with it.
Ian. And it's a wrap. Cheers and claps erupt around the set as both the cast and the production team of my latest documentary call it a wrap. My 33rd production. I should be proud. I suppose I am. But I always put a lid on the celebration because there was always more I can do. More that I want. Congratulations, job well done. I tell Jake Myers, my director, as I slap his back and hop to my feet from my chair beside his. I take a moment to congratulate our actors, narrators, and film crew. Just a moment to pause before jumping back on the hamster wheel and doing it all over again. Before you leave, Jake calls after me, bringing over a bottle of champagne he promptly opens. My assistant, Pepper, quickly appears with over a dozen plastic wine glasses that she distributes to the group. Jake raises his glass, and we all do. To Ian fucking Ford, he says. He means, to all of you, I counter, shaking my head with a smile. We all drink to a job well done. I toss a gulp down, enjoying the flavor for a hot second, but before my champagne glass is empty, I set it aside and plunge the script back into my briefcase. We're going to miss you, Ford, Georgiana, our female narrator, says. Won't be gone permanently, I tell her with a wink. But you're still moving back to New York? Got to get that next documentary done. Easier if I stay there until it's wrapped. Good and tight as a burrito, Jake adds, closing in on us before Georgiana gives me a hug and thanks me. For letting me work for you. for all the opportunities you've brought my way, she tells me. I'm always touched whenever one of my team shows gratitude. To be honest, I'm more grateful to them, well, most of them, for putting up with my need for perfection and retaking shoots to the point of exhaustion. It's a pleasure, considering each one of these things is well-deserved, I tell her. Jake watches her as she leaves, respect shining in his eyes before he turns back to me. About New York. Wouldn't have anything to do with that lady who brought you back with a smile last time? He sounds genuinely curious. Anticipatory, even. Maybe. We'll see. She was one bold kitten. We start crossing the set toward the exit. Jake is one of my closest friends in Los Angeles. We've worked together on 11 of my blockbuster films and the full 18 documentaries I'd produced. You could say that we're like brothers, and considering I've never had one and barely remember having a family except for my grandmother, I value him like one. Sounded more like a cat, he says. Cats betray you. Kittens can still learn to love you. Cannot teach a kitten loyalty. It's still a cat, he warns. I know he means he doesn't want another Cordelia in my life, and though I appreciate the gesture, I can take care of myself just fine. Mr. Ford, I've printed out your flight information as well as your room reservation, I hear Pepper say as she rushes up behind us. Four Seasons, our usual room, I inquire as she hands over the papers. Yes, sir. Thanks. I turn to leave. Call me if you need me. I'll probably have Wi-Fi on the flight as well. Oh, and Mr. Ford, she calls as I turn back to the door. She hesitates when Jake lingers by my side. Jake takes a hint and slaps my back and wishes me a safe flight before he gives us a moment alone. Thanks for the wedding gift. It was very generous, Pepper finally says. I shake my head ruefully. Glad you like the home sound system. And I apologize I won't make it to the wedding. She laughs and waves it off, as if I've just said something completely crazy. Oh, I never expected you to. You didn't? I'm confused for a second. You're generous with your money, but quite a pinch-penny with your time, Mr. Ford. Oh, and I meant no offense. She flushes beet red, and I stare at her for a moment. Jesus, is this me? Am I known to be this cold? I shake it off, granting her a smile. I wish you all the happiness, Pepper. I'll see you when you return. I mean my well wishes. I'm jaded, that's true, maybe even bitter over what happened with Cordelia, but I hope that the happiness can still be true for someone, especially Pepper, who's worked her butt off for me for years. I've never met anyone more loyal. I head out of the studio to find my Mercedes sports car parked at the curb. The top is down, so I swing my briefcase into the passenger seat and then settle behind the wheel. Good day, Mr. Ford, my personal valet says. Same to you, Pedro. Don't miss me too much. We'll try not to, sir, and this beauty either. He roves his eyes lovingly across my car. I laugh at that and hit the pedal. I head straight to my Bel Air home, ready to get packed and catch an early flight to JFK tomorrow. As I drive, I remember Sarah that day in the cab, and a part of me even fantasizes about finding her right where I saw her that first time, in the damn taxi line. I'm surprised how much I want her ass in my hand and her tongue on mine, how much I want this bold girl to come for me again. I avoid complications at all costs. Even my assistant, Pepper, is older than me by a decade and a half, not because I don't trust myself with a woman, but because I was married and never wanted Cordelia and me to have unnecessary misunderstandings, especially with me traveling so much. Sarah is a complication, the kind I prefer to avoid, especially since my divorce is far from settled, and I'm far from open to emotional entanglements at the moment. Still, the idea of being in the same city has me restless, wired. I've worked myself to the bone these past months, trying to forget that night we fucked each other senseless. It's no use. The more I try to forget, the more the memories come back to haunt me. I might as well dive in, see her again, know her full name, her likes, what makes her tick, figure out why I'm so obsessed with her. That's the only way to get her out of my mind. For the first time in over a year, New York holds strong appeal. The memory of her has only made me crave to go back for more and more. She's the first thing that's made me feel alive in too damn long. Her pussy was great, but her brazenness and that saucy mouth are what keep me awake at night. Tonight is no exception. I wander the halls of my Bel Air home at midnight. It's a three-bedroom that I bought after I moved out of my West End apartment. I'd thought to make a life here, in Los Angeles. And though business has flourished, I eye my spacious rooms and the palm trees out in the perfectly manicured lawns, and it's not me. I'm still a Manhattan man deep down. It's time I let my wife, soon to be ex-wife, stop ruining my life and driving me away from what I want. I love fucking New York City. It's my home, and always will be. Time to seal the deal, start over, and hell yes, if it's what I want, take Sarah to Daniel for dinner. I punch my lawyer's number as I climb into my silk drawstring pajamas for bed. Wahlberg, I've been thinking. When aren't you thinking? You're a machine. You need more feeling and less thinking, Ford. I've been feeling, I announce, a bit exaggeratedly. Really desperate here. And I've reconsidered the plan you mentioned the other day. Ah, the hardball plan. I tell you, with a woman like Cordelia, you need to... Let's do it, I say, cutting him off. Come again? Let's do it. I can't play nice anymore. I'm sick of her credit card bills, her phone calls, and getting jet rental invoices as she traipses around the world with any boy toy she can find. I'm not this man, Wahlberg. I'm not the one who's been made a fool of for more than a fucking year. Well, hallelujah, he's pissed now. Not pissed. Just ready to do this on my terms. Get it done. After that last instruction, I hang up. It gives me no pleasure to play hardball. Usually people respect me enough not to push me to the limit or encourage me to go there. But I'll never be free if I don't do this with her. And no matter how many wrongdoings I committed in our marriage, I fucking loved her. I tried my best. I deserve a shot at being happy again, and I plan to pursue whatever gives me a glimpse of that feeling. And when I find it, I'm never letting it go.
Name: Sarah. Bryn was right. She landed Christos. He's funding her startup. Now she gets temporary offices in Brooklyn while we get the warehouse store ready for the big launch. She wants me to be her personal assistant while I look for something I love. So, I have been going to auditions along with attending my regular dance classes, walking dogs to pay rent, and being her PA. I love the variety, and Bryn loves the help. Christos, I can't get him out of my head. You two have been spending a lot of time together for this launch, haven't you? Well, aside from the fact that he vetted me head to toe, we're looking forward to bringing this vision to fruition. It's the weekend, and we're chilling out after breakfast in our PJs in our small living room. Your designs walking around Manhattan. Hell, the whole country. Getting worn and adored? How does it make you feel? Amazing doesn't cover it. But why is it that no matter the success, we always want more? What more could you possibly want? Things are going great. In very little time, she's turned her whole life around. From homeless and penniless in Manhattan to having a fabulous roommate, that's me, and getting a cool million for her business. Christos? Oh, I smile. Well, it's the dream. Finding the one who makes your heart go pitter-pat. Makes me sad I found one who really lit me up. Makes everything seem drabber once they're gone and you have no way of finding them. Bryn sighs and scans her phone. You got another review! She peers into the screen. Sarah was wonderful. Our Boston Terrier adores her. She's even taught him to walk on a leash without pulling. So glad to have discovered her. She's reading the review left for me on a dog walking application,
and I can't help but feel warmth all over as I listen. It's odd how much I like walking these pooches, I admit, pulling my legs up on the coffee table of our living room. Will you miss walking pooches now that your startup is moving along so nicely, I ask her. Oh, definitely. She smiles, then Bryn continues fiddling with her phone, looking distracted. Spit it out, Hayworth, I demand after a minute of silence, dropping my feet and leaning forward. You're on cloud 9. I roll my eyes, pretending to be disgusted, when in fact, all this does is make me wonder why I haven't found out the name of my workaholic. I've checked the hotel log since the night he left, but all I have is that California corporation name, and nothing else.
Not cloud 9, but 10,
Bryn giggles, then pulls up a horoscope app on her phone. I watch her skim her horoscope, biting her lip thoughtfully as she reads her fortune, the stars, whatever you want to call it.
I do enjoy reading these suckers, though I never pay attention to any negative things they have to say. I only run with the good ones. This time, though, it's way off.
She sighs. I peer at the screen and realize they're predicting that she should be ready for business and pleasure, both. Has Christos broken up with his girlfriend? Seems to me like maybe that's what's going on with Bryn and her Christos lately. Read mine, I suddenly say, excited about hearing it. Wait, you read it first before telling me what it says. Shit, don't tell me if it's bad. I don't want it to jinx me or to make me feel hopeless about things.
What's your sign? She promptly asks.
Taurus, ruled by Venus. I apparently like very beautiful and expensive things. I take a peek as she searches up my sign. What does it say?
Don't peek and don't talk. I can't concentrate on reading with noise around.
She starts reading in silence.
What does it say? I ask.
Dear Taurus, she begins after a moment's hesitation.
If you still love him, go for it. Don't wait for an astrologer's permission. Don't wait for me to give you a safety net. Just do it.
What? I take it and start reading stuff like, if a relationship has felt the rough and tumble of the stars, remember the universe always helps us with course corrections to fix what's broken, or learn to let go. Damn Bryn, that little liar. I hand back her phone.
Bryn, you are a lousy astrologer. You'd die poor.
She giggles and sets the phone aside.
No, really. You're hooked on him, Sarah. I do think you need to find him. Why wait? You can be waiting forever. Why do we give our power away?
She frowns now.
I mean, we're bombarded by all these marketers telling us what to think, how to feel about ourselves. We wait to see what others think about our clothes to determine if we really like them. We wait for an astrologer to tell us the coast is clear, to do something we've been wanting to do. It's wrong.
She chews her nails thoughtfully, while I mull over the same things.
Let's do something we really want to do. Let's finally do something for ourselves. Take our own advice, she proposes.
Okay, then. Suddenly I think, why not? I won't end up worse off than I already am, and I could end up far, far better. Like with my workaholic's hands all over me. But how can I find his name when I haven't been able to so far? I consider this for a second. And then it hits me. How did I never think of this before? Because you were too busy jerking off to him in the tub, Sarah. Duh. Impulsively, I dial the number for the maitre d' at Danielle's direct line and pray that he remembers me when he answers with a curt French accent.
Oui, François.
Hardly believing I'm doing this, I get straight to the point, because I know François doesn't like to dally on bullshit.
Hi. I'd like to see if you can do me a favor and check back on your guest list for me. I need the name of one of your guests that stayed at our hotel recently.
Sarah Davies, Francois purrs with a chuckle, recognizing my voice, and then he asks me what date and says he'll look into it.
Really? You'd do that for me?
Thank you. I hang up, suddenly wide-eyed. Hell and holy shit, how did I not think of it before?
My workaholic will have had to write down his name at Danielle, pay with a credit card, check his coat, something. I'm nearly breathless with excitement, suddenly glancing at an inquisitive-looking Bryn. She looks so interested she's nearly falling off her chair. He's helping me find him. Your turn, I finally tell her, recovering myself.
Did you really call?
She sounds doubtful. Do you want to call back to verify? Come on. Your turn. Go after him, Bryn, I encourage, suddenly excited for her to do something empowering and maybe a little reckless, too. And Bryn suddenly grabs her phone and shoots off a text, and I know who she's texting. So Bryn texts Christos, and as I watch her start flushing and getting all nervous, I know that this isn't a joke. This is us, and these are our lives, and sometimes you just need to go for it. And when Bryn suddenly heads out, looking all guilty and excited, I just know that, at least for her, business and pleasure are definitely mixing tonight. What do you have in store for me, though, stars? I wonder without daring to hope. Then I stand at the window and look out at the city, and I can't help but hope. I stare out the window at New York City, the city that never sleeps, where something crazy happens every day, numbing you to the hustle and bustle. It's a city not everyone could live in, but I can't imagine living anywhere else. My earbuds are as permanent as me, walking everywhere. Thanks to walking, my legs have been lean and toned all these years, looking as good as when I spent the better part of my childhood and teen years dancing. God, it was magical to move my body to the music. I would be the instrument that the music moved, and the happiest moments I remember happened when I was lost in that music, my mind a blank, simply completely immersed in the sound and how it made my body sway to it. Sex with him felt like that, where no thought came in, only me moving to the pace he set. Men never have that control over me. Usually I would think I only satisfied my lust and that was that. But with this one, one night wasn't enough. It was a taste that only made me crave more, and now I don't even look at other men because they're just not that guy. The guy whose name I'll find out very, very soon.
Park. Sarah. It's the audition I've been waiting for, and I'm holding nothing back. I'm in my last pose, a damn fine split, sweating to the tips of my fingers and catching my breath as the music ends. And a deathly silence settles in the room. We'll call you, the woman in the perfect bun says after a long moment. She's stoic, with her legs crossed, as she sits in one of the chairs lined up at the side of the dance floor where I just leapt, twirled, twizzled, and split, did pirouettes, grand jetés, and fouetté turns, and I had my best run with this piece since I can remember. A man sits next to her who is just as stoic as she is. Neither of their expressions reveals the one crucial thing I want to know, whether they liked my piece, my moves, me, and whether my performance was good enough to get me into the show. Thank you, I answer as formally as I can, and then I get to my feet, grab my towel, and step out of the room. I pick up my duffel from the waiting room sofa, exchange my dance shoes for my running shoes, and head out in leggings and a tight long-sleeved tank top, draping a sweater around my shoulders. I'm trying not to feel defeated and assume the same thing that always happens will happen, that I will never get the call. I need to stay positive, because good thoughts bring good things. When I head home to find an empty apartment, I remember that Bryn was out dog walking this afternoon after work. I'll be alone with nothing but my damn thoughts for a few more hours. I toss my duffel onto the couch, then throw myself next to it. I wish I'd told Bryn to wait for me. I need a distraction. Without one, I'm going to either eat my nails raw or eat Bryn's secret chocolate stash, neither of which is a good option. I'm drumming my feet on the carpet and nervously surfing my phone when I decide to freshen up. I'm barely out of the shower, still wet and drying off when my phone rings. Bryn's name appears on the screen, and I almost squeal with relief, nearly tripping on the bath mat as I step out, I grab the phone to answer. Bryn, thank God.
What? Why? What happened?
Nothing, but I can't stay cooped up in here much longer. Can I meet you at Mrs. Ford's?
Actually, that's why I'm calling. I'm stuck in Central Park, and I desperately need you to change places with me. Since you filled in for me with Mrs. Ford before, would you mind helping out again? I need to rush home to change for a date with Christos tonight.
Damn, that Christos is moving fast. I don't know if I want to award the guy with a medal or get mad for stealing my roomie from me so many times. Smiling to myself, I put the phone on speaker as I yank out a pair of jeans and a cropped white sweater. I'll take the train up there right now. Send me your location. I quickly dress and comb my hair back before I give it a quick blow-dry. Then I grab my Metro card and keys and head out.
Thank you, God. At least I won't die from the anxiety yet.
This will distract me for a while, at least until I find another audition that will lessen the blow if I'm denied. I take the train to the Upper East Side, head west, and walk several blocks down the park until I spot Bryn sitting on a bench with Mrs. Ford. My favorite golden retriever, Millie, sits beside them as the two chat away. The widow seems to enjoy talking so much that sometimes I wonder if Bryn and I are the only people she interacts with. Today, she is wearing a flashy teal outfit and has her hair arranged in a fancy style, as if she is meeting someone important later. My eyes lock on a third figure sitting with them. As I near, the man glances my way before quickly shifting his gaze. I continue to stare at him as I approach, and it doesn't take long for his gaze to return to me. His large figure rises to full height as he stands to greet me, and I feel a bolt of electricity hit me in the chest as familiar eyes stare back at me. He's tall, dark-haired, gorgeous, with deep, thick-lashed eyes you want to sink into, and lips to suck on like they're all that exists between you and heaven. I stop walking, stop breathing, because he is here. A moment passes, and Bryn seems to notice my shock. But shock doesn't come close to it. Because never in my whole life has my heart leapt so far and fast. It feels as if it's ripping out of my chest. I can barely force my legs to move for fear of hearing my knees knock together. I struggle for air, but it feels like someone cut off my windpipe connecting my nose and lungs. He wears a white dress shirt and black slacks, and his face is chiseled and brooding. The real shock lies in the intensity brewing in his dark eyes as they stay locked on mine. My heart speeds up as I hold his gaze. The city bustles around us. Making eye contact is not something I do often, living in a city of millions, but I can't take my eyes off him. The memory of having him inside me returns with a vengeance. Bryn begins to introduce us.
Ian, this is...
Sarah. We've met.
Hot and dirty workaholic interrupts with a stiff smile. Our eyes meet, and for a moment it feels like nothing else exists. His name is Ian. Fucking Ian, with his serious, handsome face and shiny black hair. He's as lit as I remember. Straight out of a Suits episode, and I am dying from the happiness of staring into his hot-as-fuck face. Suddenly too nervous to be so obvious, I turn my attention back to Bryn, feeling like I'm going to vomit. My stomach is clutching so tight. I feel a little lightheaded and a lot self-conscious, and I would hate for him to notice, so I try my best to act otherwise. Confident, that's me. Except when I'm caught off guard by my sexy workaholic. I can tell by the expression of total shock in Bryn's eyes that she's just had a lightbulb moment. She knows I've just found my one-night-stand man. And she seems as shocked about who he turned out to be as I am. But she looks excited to get us talking, and to be honest, I'm just as happy to get this man to myself and shoo off Bryn to her Christos.
Ian is Mrs. Ford's grandson, she explains to me.
Then she tells Mrs. Ford,
Sarah is going to take over so I can prepare for tonight. I'll talk to you guys soon, and I watch her leave.
So now what? What do I say?
He's Mrs. Ford's grandson. I can't just grab his dick and tell him how much I've dreamed about it. And him.
Millie barks, and I realize Ian, too, is looking at me, with a thoughtful frown and a wicked, devious glimmer in his eyes. Is he thinking of our evening in 1103, too?
Here, give me that,
he gruffly tells Millie, and he grabs Millie's toy and tosses it relatively close and tells her to fetch. I become aware of Mrs. Ford looking at us in interest. I give her a smile, hoping that it looks innocent, and quickly occupy myself with Millie.
Do you two want to walk Millie around while I relax?
Mrs. Ford asks Ian and me.
You can get to know each other. Sarah is one of my favorite girls, Ian, and Ian is my favorite grandson, Sarah. There is no other man in the world for me.
I'm your only grandson, Gran, and I'd love to get to know Sarah more intimately.
He winks at her, looking charming and much more of a good guy than the guy I fucked in room 1103. Mrs. Ford chuckles and pulls out a book, as if that is that. As if the word intimately didn't mean a whole other thing to me than it probably does to Mrs. Ford. Ian, my workaholic, my one-night stand, my perfect lay, watches me daringly while he takes the leash. His gaze meets mine as he motions me forward. I start down the path with wobbly knees, aware of him and Millie stepping in beside me.
How have you been? He asks, voice low.
Good. I'm glad to see you. I smile.
He smiles too, and my eyes almost hurt by looking at the face of my dreams up close again.
Can't say I wasn't disappointed when I checked in today to see you gone, he says.
I'm shocked to hear this, something his dark gaze seems to easily drink in.
Yeah, Sarah, I noticed.
He leads Millie to a shady area surrounded by trees.
Did I have anything to do with you leaving?
No. I really don't want him to worry, and I'm pretty sure he wouldn't like having affected my job that way. They're making cuts, and I was probably the worst concierge they had, so they let me go. I roll my eyes as if they're so silly to have done that.
That's not accurate.
Ian tuts and shakes his head.
You went above and beyond for their customers.
Not really. Just one of them. As my words fill the air around us, suddenly we're both staring at each other. The chemistry between us so on fire I worry for the trees nearby.
I should change hotels,
he says mischievously, a twinkle in his dark eyes.
No, you shouldn't.
Absolutely I will. If they can't value you, then I'm not interested.
Your company sends you to that hotel. You and other execs.
You don't think I can persuade my company to change hotels?
I'd hate to lose you and your company's business if I were them. But... I reach out and steal Millie's leash from his fingers, then twirl around and face him, backing away from him as I narrow my eyes. I think you're bluffing to make me feel better. I'm fine, though. Trust me. I've got this. I point toward a sniffing, tail-wagging Millie. I also have a job helping my roommate with her new business.
You find that rewarding?
I find my salary rewarding. There's a slight quickening in my pulse when he smiles.
And the job?
He asks, tilting his head in curiosity. I'm grateful for it. I can't say I don't still look at casting calls in the city, but it'll do.
Shouldn't be hard to find plenty of those. This is New York, after all.
I know. There is more to my story, though, and I'm surprised when I say it out loud. I was so close to landing the gig of my dreams years ago. My body failed me terribly.
Bad body, I chide. What happened?
He frowns, but the look he gives my body isn't exactly one that agrees with me about my body being bad. Shit. A lot of shit. I ended up as a concierge.
Can't say I regret that decision or turn of events.
There's that smile again. Really, Our one-night stand was that profound to you.
I'm about to make it two.
As I keep backing away and he keeps walking forward, I catch him glancing at my lips. He doesn't even try to hide it. It turns me on. My hungry body recognizes him as the last guy to pleasure me, and my hormones are flooding my system in response. I start feeling my heart pound, and I can barely suppress my crazy out-of-control reaction. I can almost taste him on my mouth, can almost feel his touch, like I did in room 1103. Exhaling, I spin back around so that Millie and I are walking a few steps ahead of him, and I tuck my hair behind my ear and try to ignore my erratic hormones. Seeing him again, his gorgeous face, his sexy designer slacks, and that crisp white shirt, inhaling his intoxicating scent, I'm reminded why I haven't stopped thinking about him since that night. This guy makes me hungry. Hungry like someone who hasn't eaten for days and is standing before a chocolate buffet, and chocolate is her favorite. He catches up with us, stealing the leash back from me. His fingers brush over mine, and he tugs on the leash so slowly that I know it's on purpose. So this is how I find out your name. I tut and shake my head.
I seem to have one.
And it's a fairly easy one to spell. You definitely could have shared that with me, I add with a raised brow.
It wasn't relevant at the time.
And is it relevant now, I fish? We pause in the middle of the path. He loosens the leash, while Millie sniffs around a large tree trunk, and we stare at each other. He eyes my lips, and I eye his.
Maybe.
Maybe what?
Maybe it's relevant. Maybe it's not.
I wait. Ian. I test his name out loud. I like it. His eyes darken, as if hearing his name is the most effective aphrodisiac for the man. I curse myself for saying it in the middle of Central Park, not that I can do anything about quenching our thirst now. I wonder if he's going to take a cab back to the hotel. I can straddle him again, tease him again, turn him on so much he'll fuck me hard and fast. Again. Suddenly Ian's phone seems to vibrate in his pocket, and when he pulls it out, he scans a message.
Gran needs to head back. Apparently she forgot a massage therapist is coming over in 30 minutes.
He tucks his phone into the pocket of his slacks as he tugs Millie back onto the path. You're good with your grandma, I say.
I'm better in bed, he grins.
I laugh, but feel a telling flush on my cheeks. What is this guy doing to me? I'm flushing on our way back to Mrs. Ford. We hand over Millie, and after Ian puts her in a cab and I've waved goodbye to her, I stand before him with my veins boiling in anticipation. He seems to hesitate, just staring at me, with something I can't quite decipher, a mixture of frustration and something else.
Well, goodbye.
Wow, did I misread him? Probably I did. Hating that the flush is coming back, I turn to head for the train. One second I'm walking forward, trying to ignore the whacking of my crazy heart and the fact that Ian Ford, my one-night stand, is standing only a few feet away from me, and the next, his arm flies out and his hand curves tightly around my wrist.
Sarah.
I turn. I can hardly take the flames in his eyes. With his free hand, he hails a taxi, and when it stops before us, he opens the door for me. I know what's happening, and I want it to happen so much that I quickly climb into the back of the cab. Ian climbs in behind me.
Where to? The driver asks. The nearest 5-star hotel you can find.
Ian looks at me with a frown. 4 stars will do just fine, I add urgently, and Ian's frown turns to a look of interest. He grabs my waist and drags me toward him, and before I can take another breath, he's got his hands, oh gosh, his hands, on me, and he's shoving his tongue into my mouth and, oh crap, I hadn't been hallucinating. My memory didn't fail me. In fact, it failed only in the sense that I didn't remember the exact way he tasted, kissed,
But what I never forgot was that it was heart-stopping, toe-curling, panty-melting, and a little bit soul-wrenching, the way he eats at my mouth, the hunger and the latent passion there. I didn't remember that he was this irresistible. My panties are soaked, and my lungs are working overtime trying to find a breath. I grab the back of his head as aggressively as he's grabbing mine and push back at his tongue. Ian drops his head to nibble and bite at my neck when I drag my lips to kiss and lick his ear. And as New York passes by the window, we cling.